Good Morning Pensacola. Andrew McKay and the Pensacola Morning News starts right now.
Charged in the fatal shooting of an Okaloosa County deputy is avoiding the death penalty. Timothy Williams pleaded guilty to first-degree murder yesterday. It was a part of a deal with the state attorney's office. He's accused of killing Corporal Ray Hamilton. In 2022, Hamilton responded to a domestic violence call on Christmas Eve. The sheriff's office says Price Williams refused to leave the home, then opened fire out of the window, striking Hamilton. He later died from his injuries at the hospital.
This is a horrible story. You may remember on Christmas Eve in 2022, the deputies in Okaloosa County Sheriff's Office responded to an incident, a domestic incident, and wound up getting shot at. And Price Williams, the defendant in this case, accused of shooting and killing Corporal Hamilton, as multiple deputies responded to domestic violence call to home in Fort Walton Beach. During the response, he refused to leave the home, began firing shots out of a window. Corporal Hamilton was struck by one of the bullets, taken to the hospital, where he was later pronounced dead. And attempted murder on the other deputies as well. And then the question is, well, okay, so why is it that he's not getting the death penalty charge? And the answer is because he agreed as a plea deal to accept the charge of first-degree murder as long as it would not be anything more than life. And there are, you know, other charges on the table as well, which he's apparently confessed to, and that adds up to, what, four life sentences, I believe. And so he can never get out because there's no, you know, there's no parole like that here in, the state of Florida has no parole, so life is life, and he'll die in prison. According to Assistant State Attorney Trey Myers, this is WEAR's coverage, by the way. Good job to them. He pled guilty to three counts of attempted first-degree felony murder for shooting at three other deputies on the scene that day, based on the police sentence to four consecutive life sentences. Sentencing officially hasn't happened yet, but it will happen here shortly. So why not the death penalty? Well, as Bridget Jensen, who was talking to Channel 3 about this, she's in the state attorney's office, she says,
they wanted some finality, and they didn't want to have to, you know, sit through a month-long trial and just have all of those emotions, you know, ramped back up.
She's quoted in the story as saying, we felt the death penalty was absolutely appropriate in this case. It's obviously not the state attorneys that have to go through the very emotional, the very stressful, the very uncomfortable trial of having our loved ones' autopsy photos that are going to be displayed to everyone who's in the audience. They wanted some finality, and they didn't want to have to sit through a month-long trial and just have all these emotions ramped back up. I'm not a citizen of Okaloosa County. I'm not the family members in this case. But I find this news frustrating as a citizen, because I think that people who kill people premeditated, first-degree murder, should be executed. And I extra think that people who kill cops premeditated should be executed. I believe in capital punishment. Vehemently believe in capital punishment. I believe in it for enough reasons to have written a series of 11 editorials on it one time, like 12,000 words. I believe in it. Like, this is what the Bible says. This is what people say. This is what psychology says. This is what the effectiveness says. This is what deterrence says. And, you know, like, pretty thoroughly thought through, you know, this thing for me. And I got to be honest, I understand what the state attorney's office decided. And I think the state attorney's office is wrong. I understand the impulse of not wanting to put the family through the trial and everything that comes with the trial. Now you're compounding the loss of their loved one with the emotional distress of the trial. Who wouldn't understand that? But here's the problem. It's either right or wrong to execute him. And the feelings of the family of the victim are not the only fact to consider in whether it's right or wrong to execute them. In fact, I'll go farther. I don't think you should consider those things at all. And here's why. The family's not the only victim. The sheriff's office is a victim. The community is a victim. The county is a victim. The state is a victim. Every other law enforcement officer in Okaloosa County and the state is a victim. Because all of them and all of us are affected by the decision to not execute this alleged cop killer. And the reason you don't let the family decide is the same reason that you don't let the family sit on the jury. They're too close. They're too invested. If family A loses a loved one, and I know I'm talking about this a little bit in the like clinical philosopher's way, and I apologize for that because this is a very real thing that happened to our neighbors to the east. But sometimes you have to step back and be dispassionate about this the way a lawyer or a judge or a philosopher should be. And in this particular case, like if you have a family member of victim A, and that family member is, or those family members are in favor of the death penalty, and they say, yes, seek the death penalty, we are on board. And then you have family B, where they say, okay, we favor the death penalty, but we don't want to endure the trouble of having to prosecute it. And then you have family C, all the facts are the same except the families. Family C, we don't believe in the death penalty and we don't want you to pursue the death penalty. You don't let the decision about what justice demands depend on what the victims say. You have to ask the community, you have to ask the duly elected authorities what they say. And the choice to underpunish by life in prison is a choice to not seek full justice. And that has community consequences. I've always thought it was very inappropriate to ask the victims' families whether they wanted to see the death penalty applied. It's common in the news. You report, well, we don't want this because we're opposed to the death penalty, or we do want this because we're... It doesn't matter what the victim's family wants. The question is, what does the community want? And the way you know what the community wants is by asking the appropriate elected leaders, which is the state attorney's office. And they're looking at the law and prosecuting the law. Again, they're too close to it. They're too personally invested. And you don't let the individual family's belief in or not belief in, or in this case, willingness to suffer more, and they will suffer more going through this process. But none of that is the reason you do or don't prosecute for the death penalty. 437-1620, John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by Executive Landscaping. Call them today for all your commercial and premium landscaping needs. Still rolling accident-free right now. Looks like I-10, I-110 are looking good, even 90, 98. I'm not seeing any delays to let you know about. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Yeah, to me, I want the death penalty for anybody who commits premeditated murder with enough aggravating circumstance. I mean, the law, right? You kill a kid, you kill a woman, you kill a man, you kill a cop, especially you kill a cop. Because that needs to be every criminal who ever considers the possibility of armed resistance to the police needs to know, if I do this in Okaloosa County and live, I won't live. And now what they'll know is, if I do this in Okaloosa County, I might be okay. We cannot as a society afford to send that message. In my opinion. And you can feel free to disagree with me. I'm Andrew McKay.
Here's today's strength for life. It's okay to be angry. Godly parents should be lovingly angry with their children when they make sinful choices. Christian citizens should be righteously indignant over the rapidly increasing carnality of our country. Individuals should be personally angry when we do things that we know we shouldn't. Anger is often a right and God-honoring response, but anger can quickly accelerate into sin and into opportunities for the devil. Ephesians 4 instructs us to be angry, but sin not, neither give place or opportunity to the devil. Anger can easily become unrighteous and self-glorifying. Beware of sinful anger, because that's where the devil can get a foothold and ruin your marriage, destroy your relationships with your children, and wreak relational havoc of various types. So as much as possible, be a kind one to another, tender-hearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you.
For more Strength for Life, check out our website at strengthforlife.church.
Hurricane season is here, and now is the time to make a plan and know your zone. In the case of an evacuation, have a plan to go to a hurricane shelter, hotel, or stay with a family or friends. If you're ordered to evacuate, you need to leave. You can rebuild your home, but you cannot rebuild your life. This hurricane season, know your zone. Know your home. Learn more at floridadisaster.org. This message is sponsored by the Florida Division of Emergency Management, the Florida Association of Broadcasters, and this radio station.
Hi, I'm Terrence A. Gross. As many of you know, I am a local board-certified personal injury lawyer, and I have practiced in this community for almost 40 years. Our law firm handles only people that have been injured due to the negligence of another. Join me this Wednesday at 10:30 on Pep Talk as we discuss all aspects of personal injury law.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Like what you hear?
Give us your feedback by filling out our News Radio Listener Advisory Board survey. Just go to our website, newsradio923.com, and fill it out.
Simple.
News Radio 92.3.
The Senate will decide your fate.
I am the Senate.
Not unexpected. I have some email or some texts in here. I want to respond to them. They're all good questions that are appropriate in the conversation about the death penalty, deterrence, justice, retribution, all of that. One person says, which part of the Bible do you go for? Do you go for the part that says that certain things deserve death, or do you go for the part that says do not kill? Well, I don't think that's a good translation. Thou shalt not murder. Both versions of the Ten Commandments, Exodus and Deuteronomy, also contain other passages very close there that specify the times the state should execute people. So the people who say that the Bible says you shall not, for example, execute a murderer, I mean, you just need to read more of it. I don't know what you're, honestly, you're not even trying. So that's kind of a silly argument. Well, what about grace? This is a little bit better argument. Somebody says, you know, the New Testament, especially if you're a Christian, but the Old Testament carries grace in it as well. You know, should you not exercise grace towards people? We don't build a justice system on grace. You build a justice system on justice. Grace is, you know, or forgiveness is something for individuals, and we still have quite a bit of grace even built into our system. For example, commutation of sentences. Or, you know, for example, the idea of siding so heavily with not convicting the innocent, right? You know, presumed innocent until proven guilty. But, you know, grace and forgiveness are, you know, you could say the same argument about why would you put him in jail at all? I mean, if you're going to not execute somebody because of grace and forgiveness, why would you put him in jail at all? It's the same argument, but you just don't apply it consistently. Somebody else says the death penalty is pointless, zero deterrent effect in reality. Oh, I actually think that deterrence is kind of a weird one. The efficacy or not of deterrence has to do with how we do it generally. I don't actually think deterrence is the main argument. I think most people get off on the argument about deterrence, as in they get off track. That's kind of a mistake. Here's why. Let's imagine bubblegum chewing, okay, and throwing your gum on the ground. Terrible, horrible, wicked offense, right? Right? I mean, we all think that only a really, really wicked person does this because it is such a disproportionate cost to the people who step on it compared to the very, very small benefit to the people who, you know, spit it out, right? Okay, so what should you do? I mean, let's execute people who throw bubblegum on the sidewalk. Would you affect deterrence? Would fewer people do it? Of course you would.
The answer would be yes, Andrew.
Is that justify executing bubblegum spitters? Well, no, because it's an overpunishment. If punishment A is justified for justice reasons, you can't overpunish in order to accomplish deterrence. If justice accomplishes deterrence, great. If justice does not accomplish deterrence, it's still justice. And the whole question about deterrence has a mistake built in it because you're presuming that the would-be murderer is rational. And I don't, some would-be murderers are rational, some would-be murderers are not rational. You know, you're asking somebody to think, well, okay, I'm standing in Florida right now, they execute people like me, but if I go to Alabama or if I go to Tennessee, I mean, there's all kinds of rationality problems here in the way you think about deterrence. So even though I used the example of deterrence for the would-be cop killer in a hypothetical scenario, I don't really think that's the main argument. I think the main argument is simple justice. This same person had asked, what should be the purpose of incarceration, criminal punishment, deterrence, retribution, rehabilitation? Well, we're not rehabilitating them either way. Because if he's in prison for life, it's not a rehabilitative goal anyway. He's never going to be reintroduced into society, right? Rehabilitation is a wash between execution and life in prison. Deterrence, I think, is kind of not the point. It's not retribution. It's justice. Honestly, this is my view based on what I consider a fairly careful study of the topic and of the Bible and prayer and writing, like I said, a lot on this subject. I think that the only way to honor the humanity of the person who commits the murder is to execute him, because you're allowing him to pay the only way you can pay for a life, which is with a life. The blood basically pays. It's kind of a theme in the Bible. And so the reason you execute capital offenders is precisely because that validates their humanity and gives them the chance to pay for the evil that they have done, the only way they can pay. 7:25 on News Radio 92.3. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Brought to you by ECUA Bulkway Services. Now call for pickup. Call by 2 p.m. the day before your service day. You can learn more at ecua.fl.gov. Still rolling accident-free right now. Just seeing some minor delays on Avalon Boulevard southbound as you approach I-10. But I-10, I-110 are actually looking really good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Somebody says 437-1620. You didn't know you were going to step into a philosophy clinic this morning.
Wow.
But here we are.
Here we are.
Somebody says,
bro,
on average, it costs $50,000 a year to keep someone in death row. If we live 20 years in death row, it costs state of Florida $1 million. Florida has 268 inmates on death row right now, and a bullet doesn't cost very much. But the flip side is that all the appeals and the security of death row are so expensive, prohibitively so. The argument that opponents will say is it costs more to execute than to put in prison, and that the numbers are on their side. But, of course, that's because of the way we do it. We do not have to do it this way. But every time you cut costs, you also cut into the chances that you are, you know, punishing, you know, executing somebody who's innocent. I agree. I think it should be more expeditious. If you did it with more of a time limit and you did it under certain better circumstances, for example, I don't think we should be executing people unless we are beyond, not even a shadow of a doubt, no doubt. I don't think the legal standard should be, you know, beyond a reasonable doubt. It should be no doubt at all. Cases where there's any uncertainty, you let them live. Cases where there's absolutely no uncertainty, execute them in as expeditious a way as possible. Allowing the full course of legal appeals, which spreads out over 20 years or whatever, is crazy. I mean, like another case out of Okaloosa County. I wasn't going to get into this just today, but we find ourselves here. We've got a murderer is going to be executed Thursday out of Okaloosa County also. And I told you last week on Friday, I didn't want to get into the case because the details are horrific. This is really, really a bad story. This is the case, Edward Zakruski, who killed his wife and kids in 1994. And, God, I don't want to tell you that. I'm telling you this. For people who are opposed to the death penalty, read the details. What he did to his wife, what he did to the kids, I would tell you because I want you to know, but it'll ruin your week to think about. It's genuinely horrific. And people are going to protest and say you shouldn't be executing him. Why? Why? It should have been done in 1994. Or give him a year, 1995. We're 30 years later. That's insane. So, yeah, there's a lot of conversation around this topic. Much of it is poorly reasoned. Some of it is relevant, but maybe not well-reasoned. And some of it, I mean, frankly, some people are just, you know, vindictive. They want to see punishment meted out. I don't relish punishing people. I'd rather see people saved. But I know why we punish them. It's not because of bloodlust or revenge. It's because that's the only way you can allow a person to expiate, to pay for the thing they've done. That's it. David Wayne is in the newsroom with our headlines. David?
Well, Andrew, I did get a little bit more information on the arrest of that Delta pilot after his plane landed in San Francisco over the weekend. The pilot reportedly facing a child pornography charge. If you missed that story last hour, the pilot was taken into custody when his plane landed. Federal agents boarded and arrested the pilot before passengers even got off the plane on Saturday. President Trump says new trade deal with the European Union that will lower tariffs on the 27-nation bloc to 15%. The president called it the biggest of all deals during a news conference Sunday with the European Commission head Ursula von der Leyen in Scotland. Trump said the EU has agreed to purchase $750 billion worth of energy and $600 billion worth of investments in the U.S. And the Fantastic Four movie had a good weekend, $118 million at the box office for their opening weekend.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. 7:30 on News Radio 92.3. One last quick one on this topic, since apparently this is the capital punishment half hour, but I think it's appropriate. We don't talk about this stuff enough. Somebody might well say, well, Andrew, don't you want people to get saved? You just said you did. I do. Nothing like the imminent prospect of execution forces a person to consider their ultimate status. Somebody who doesn't know when they're going to die over the course of the next 40 years is never really forced to think about that the way a date and a time forces you to think about it. I think you're much more likely to produce a confession and a salvation by knowing you're going to get executed.
Fox News, I'm CJ Pop with the sounds of the bagpipes. At President Trump's golf course in Turnberry, Scotland, he meets the British Prime Minister, Keir Starmer, for talks on trade and restarting ceasefire talks between Israel and the terror group Hamas. President Trump on the situation in Gaza.
Those children look very hungry, but we're giving a lot of money and a lot of food, and other nations are now stepping up.
Prime Minister Starmer.
Nobody wants to see that, and I think people in Britain are revolted at seeing what they're seeing on their screens. So we've got to get to that ceasefire, and thank you, Mr. President, for leading on that, and also to just get more and more aid in.
That meeting taking place less than 24 hours at the massive tariff and trade deal between the U.S. and European Union. And today, Treasury Secretary Scott Bessent is in Sweden meeting with his counterparts from China. America's listening to Fox News.
Good morning, 7:31 at News Radio 92.3. It's 81 right now. We've got sunny skies. The real field temperature right now, already about 95 degrees this morning. Of course, we'll check in with Brooke Richardson and get our Channel 3 forecast here in just a few minutes. A Pensacola man's been charged for a shooting that happened June of last year. Caleb Sincere Manning is the second person now to be charged in the murder of Terrell Owens on West Gonzalez Street. Police say he was shot in a drive-by shooting last year while sitting on his porch. 22-year-old Tyree Baldwin was the first person charged in that incident. He's been held in the Escambia jail since March. Manning has now been in jail since the 16th of July on a separate gun and drug charge. He's being held without bond now on charges related to the homicide. Emerald Coast Wildlife Refuge in Navarre is temporarily hitting pause on intakes of orphaned wildlife as they focus on caring for the animals they've already got in their custody. The refuge says this is due to high demand and limited staffing. They are encouraging the community to reach out if they need guidance on reunification or to find access to other resources for wildlife. The refuge says they will still share updates on when intakes will resume and alternative options on their social media. A race boat caught on fire in Pensacola Bay on Sunday happened near Three Mile Bridge. Officials say the Coast Guard was dispatched, but a Good Samaritan helped to put that fire out before they arrived. So far, there's no word on the cause of the fire. Two people are injured after a shooting on Avery Street in Pensacola over the weekend. Officials say that happened Saturday. The suspect was still at the home when police arrived. There were some road closures in the area. Investigators say a woman was shot. She's currently in stable condition at a local hospital. SWAT teams were activated. Police attempted negotiations with the suspect, but he was later found with a self-inflicted gunshot wound. An investigation is ongoing. Senator Rick Scott trying to lure New Yorkers to Florida. Scott paid for a plane to fly over parts of New York City over the weekend. That plane had a banner reading, quote, "Hate socialism? Us too. Move to FL." Scott criticized New York for shunning capitalism and celebrating radical socialists, he says, like mayoral candidate Zohran Mamdani. Thousands of NASA employees are taking advantage of early retirement options. NASA recently announced that 3,000 employees have accepted early retirement offers or resigned. This amounts to about a fifth of their workforce. That leaves NASA with about 14,000 civil servants still on their payroll. Well, Planet Fitness is moving across the street from their 9 Mile location. The new gym will neighbor Aldi. It's in leftover space from the old Winn-Dixie after they converted to Aldi earlier this year. Planet Fitness plans to build a 19,000-square-foot gym there with new restrooms, showers, and they'll include, of course, their Black Card Spa area with the massage chairs and such. The new gym is scheduled to open in September. The current Planet Fitness on 9 Mile will likely close the week that the new gym opens. That would also clear the way for Costco, which has been looking at the building over there for a 172,000-square-foot store with a gas station between Sam's Seafood and Wells Fargo. 735 right now, News Radio, and John Pickens has our traffic on the fives.
That's right. No accidents to report to you right now. I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29. Starting to see those construction and congestion delays. Also, if you are traveling on, let's see here, Davis Highway southbound, even before the hospital approaching Olive Road, and to see maybe a 7 to 9 minute delay associated with that just due to congestion. Other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
Thank you very much, John. Let's get a look at our Channel 3 forecast with Brooke Richardson.
We are going to be seeing a beautiful day today, but a very hot day. Plenty of sunshine with temperatures getting near 97 degrees for your high. Heat advisory is in place with heat index values up to 112. Overnight tonight, temperatures dropping near 81. For Tuesday, a little bit more rain in the forecast. 40% chance of a shower or thunderstorm, high near 96. Tuesday night, temperatures dropping near 78. Stay connected to Channel 3 News First Warning Weather Team. Download the WEAR-TV Weather app. This is Brooke Richardson from the First Warning Weather Center.
Thank you very much, Brooke. 81 degrees right now. Sunny skies are a real field temp at about 95. Your next news at 8 o'clock and breaking news anytime. I'm David Wayne for News Radio 92.3.
I'm Nicole Murray with Your Money Now. Alibaba has unveiled a pair of smart glasses powered by its artificial intelligence models. The e-commerce giant said the Quark AI glasses will be launched in China by the end of 2025, with hardware powered by the firm's Qwen large language model and its advanced AI assistant called Quark. UnitedHealth's second quarter earnings comes 2.5 months since Chairman and CEO Stephen Hemsley retook the role of chief executive. The company pledged to provide new guidance on 2025 earnings with the release after suspending its outlook in May following an abrupt change of leadership. Warner Brothers Discovery had two films cross the $500 million mark this weekend, DC Studios Superman and Apple's F1. The benchmark is a boon for Warner Brothers DC Studios, as Superman is the first theatrical debut of James Gunn and Peter Safran since they became co-heads of the film and TV unit in late 2022. Futures are slightly higher. Friday, the Dow Industrials gained 208. That's your money now.
Northwest Florida businesses pay an average 20% more for phone service. Data Revolution wants to change that. We are your local, service-focused VoIP provider. Right now, offering a free bill review and free installation for new customers. No matter where your team is, Data Revolution can help. Experience the service and support only a locally owned company can provide. Join the revolution at datarevs.com.
Local radio brings people together like never before.
It's a beautiful hometown weekend out there. We've got
your local stations keep you informed and involved with music, talk shows, and real-time news updates you can trust. We are live and local. We are America's broadcasters, connecting you to what matters most. Text radio to 52886 and tell Congress to support your local radio stations.
Message and data rates may apply. You may receive up to 4 messages a month, and you may text STOP to STOP.
This message furnished by the National Association of Broadcasters.
Ready for intelligent and thought-provoking conversation? Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola. Weekdays from 2 till 4 p.m. on 92.3, 95.3, and AM 1620. Guy Benson, the brilliant and charismatic host, brings you a fresh perspective on the biggest stories of the day. Guy keeps you engaged and informed. Don't miss out on the intellectual thrill ride. Tune in to The Guy Benson Show on News Radio Pensacola from 2 till 4 p.m. It's the show that'll challenge your thinking and leave you wanting more on News Radio Pensacola.
Baby, it's a red flag day, but baby, let's get in the water. Taken out by a wave where we've never been before. Baby, it's a red flag day.
That's my new favorite whenever we're talking to our public safety people. That's that's my new favorite one by U2. Red Flag Day, which I've never heard that song before, and then I stumbled across it. I thought, oh, that's a really good song for us. Joining us now by phone, we have Eric Gilmore, the Director of Public Safety for Escambia County. Eric, welcome back, sir.
Good morning, Andrew. Good to be here.
Good morning. All right. I have two, you know me, you and I have known each other a long time, and I'm always coming up with weird ideas. I have two.
Yeah, I agree.
What's that?
I agree. Weird ideas. Go ahead.
I have two that I want to throw at you this morning, and then we got a lot of stuff about EMS and fire that I want to – we'll talk about that as well, of course. Lots of stuff to talk about. Here's my first weird idea. One of the things that I was thinking about – I don't remember how I thought of this, but you and I are always talking about how EMS has trouble – I mean, you know, the problem is getting good people and getting enough people to respond. And one of the clogs in the system, one of the challenges in the system is that you have these low acuity calls – alphas and bravos, which you have to respond to them, but they don't necessitate the same kind of care, attention, training, diligence, whatever, as D's and deltas and echoes. And then the problem is that if somebody requires a transport for an alpha or a bravo, then you've got two people on a truck tied up going to the hospital. If the hospital's backed up, they sit there and hold the wall, which means they sit there with their patient, because by law in Florida, you can't just drop somebody off. If they're under your care, they're under your care until you transfer them to somebody else's care. Okay. So the number of man hours taken up by all of that is a lot. And if there were a way to reduce it, it seems like that would be an advantage. And so here's my idea. My question for you first. You have to have two people on the EMS ambulance by law, right?
Correct. I have to have two people on the truck. One driving, one attending. Correct.
Are there ever situations that EMS responds to where it would really be perfectly adequate to have just one person respond?
The simple answer to that is no. I have to have to be able to be BLS, basic life support, which means I have at least an EMT in the back attending to the patient, and ALS, which means I have to have a paramedic or a physician in the back of the ambulance. So I have to have two. I can't just have a driver and Uber somebody, like an Uber, and drive somebody to a hospital. So by law, for my license, I have to have at least two people on the truck. You always have to have somebody attending to the patient in the back. Now, it might be a simple, I got a stubbed toe, I got a toothache, and these things happen. We have those calls. That you wouldn't need somebody to attend to somebody. You don't need check vitals every 5 minutes or anything like that. But I, by law, to be ALS and BLS certified, I have to have two people on the truck.
Okay, I know, but I'm assuming we can change the law. If we could change the law, if I gave you the power, if I gave Eric Gilmore and EMS the opportunity that a call comes in that's it's a toe stub case, okay, and I gave you legally the ability to send a single person out to that call, would that save you hours and money and create efficiency if that were allowed legally?
It would. Yes, it would.
Okay.
And just to let you know, we're trying to work the system in our favor by using sprints. So if I've got a crew, it takes two people in a truck. So you and I work a truck together. You're a paramedic and I'm an EMT, and you call out the day. So now I'm just a single person. I can't put myself in a truck and ride around and do what you're, like you're saying.
Right.
I put myself on a Sprint, which is an SUV. So then I get in an SUV today, and those calls come in, and I put that Sprint on it. And that individual goes out there in an SUV, and we get med control on the phone, and we either treat in place or we call them. Where are you starting to use the micro transit? That they can come out and pick you up and then take you to the doctor or the hospital or whatever. So we're trying to use our resources wisely and doing those things. So we're trying to do that right now.
So that, see, to me, that sounds great. And all I guess all I'm asking is, you know, we always have legislators listening to the show.
Yes.
Is this something where if somebody could persuade the legislators to take up a revision of the requirement for two people, would that improve your ability to respond appropriately to A's and B's in a way that you maybe right now can't, and would make you more efficient, maybe cut down response time, maybe multiply your force factors? Would that help? That's what I'm asking. Would that help you?
It would help. Absolutely would. The only concern I would have is the manipulation of the system, that people look at it and go, this is actually a Charlie Tuck call, but we're going to downgrade it to a Bravo and just get in the truck and I'll drive you to the hospital. Those are my concerns.
But at some point, we have to trust that you guys are going to do the right thing. I mean, we're putting people's lives in your hands.
Oh, no, absolutely.
You know, so I think we have to trust you on that. Okay, well, that's what I was asked, because I feel like, you know, we've looked at so many different elements of the EMS puzzle, and that was one that just occurred to me, and I thought, well, you know, let's ask. I'll ask Eric Gilmore. He's the expert. I have another one coming up here in just a second. Eric Gilmore is the Director of Public Safety in Escambia County. He's universally, everybody loves Eric, and he's done so many different things. That's why I love talking to him. Plus, he talks fast, which makes me happy. John Pickens has got traffic on the 5. John?
No accidents to report to you right now. I-10 eastbound between Pine Forest and Highway 29. Seeing those congestion delays. Also, Davis Highway southbound as you approach Olive Road and Olive Road going eastbound. You're going to see some minor delays there. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the 5.
Thanks so much, John. Back to Eric Gilmore, Director of Public Safety in Escambia County. That means that fire and EMS and emergency management and the beach lifeguards all kind of report to him, basically. Okay, Eric, second one. Milton, in its budgeting this year, is putting in, they're putting in an 8% raise for their firefighters. And their stated reason for that is that they are not able to keep up with other agencies in the area because, for example, ECFR, Escambia County Fire Rescue, has recently done, you know, raises over the last couple of years. Everybody's always doing raises, and I hear this all the time. Escambia's got to raise rates because Santa Rosa raises rates. Santa Rosa's got to raise rates because Okaloosa raises rates. Okaloosa's losing people to Gulf, to Pensacola. Pensacola's, everybody's in this kind of arms race over the cost of firefighters. Two different possible solutions. One possible solution is, could there not be some kind of a state regulation of the wages? I want to pay people what they're worth, but I feel like as a taxpayer, you guys are always competing against each other in an unhealthy way, and it's costing all of us money. And in the end, it's just, it's just driving up the cost, which is a problem for me as a citizen taxpayer. The other thought is, why do we have fire as a county or city-based function anyway? Wouldn't it maybe make more sense to have it be like District 1, where we have several counties all collaborating so that, I know you have mutual aid agreements with Alabama and with Santa Rosa County and all. It seems like, especially geographically, Gulf Breeze is 5 minutes from Pensacola. Gulf Breeze should be much more connected to the Pensacola Fire Department than it should be to Milton. Would it make sense to move fire functions to be district responsibility instead of a county-by-county or city-by-city responsibility? I know that's a wing question. I'm trying to solve this problem of everybody battling each other by raising rate time.
Yeah, that's a big onion to peel.
Thank you.
You threw me a big one. Yes, absolutely. So if the state would regulate it, then yes, that would help. Because if you look at South Florida, they pay their fire medics, an absorbent rate. But the cost of living and everything's higher down there. So it's based on cost of living and things like that. To the independent or the district-wide type.
So let me just pause for a second. So if they did something like they do for setting the salaries for commissioners based on population and cost of living, maybe something like that could also apply to either wages or increasing rates or some kind of factor to control it a little bit might make sense. Okay, I hear you. Go ahead. Second part.
Yeah. All right, second part. That one's a pretty big one because each fire district has its own needs. And I say that. So you take Midway, you take Gulf Breeze. They're more, beach centric. They have a higher a population, a higher density. The need might be more medical than fire. And you get a district like what we have here in Escambia County in District 3's area where we have more structure fires. So it's more structure fire centric. And then not to mention that because we are a county-based system and we're one of the few in the panhandle that's countywide, and I say countywide, which means we cover everything from the cotton fields in the north end to the beaches in the south end. We are very diverse in what our skill set has to be as far as farm medics with, cotton picker extrications or things like that, all the way down to water rescues and then even high-rise. We have a USAR team, like technical rescue teams that go out and do rope rescues, trench rescues, confined space rescues. A lot of departments don't have that. They just have what they need for their district. And then some of the people go get their specialized training and not have a full on-set team to go be able to do certain things like that. So as I said, we're countywide. So we are, from the cotton fields to the beaches. And then you look at these independent districts that are just, they cover, 30 square miles.
Right.
We cover 600-something square miles. They cover 30 square miles, which they know what the absolute need is for that district. I'm doing a fire structure fire, so fire suppression is one of them. I'll have brush fires from time to time in some of these wooded lots. That's no problem. I will definitely have medical calls. We'll have car accidents, but I don't have high rises, so I don't need a high angle rescue team. That's something that if we run in that situation for whatever reason, I'll call a specialized team in with mutual aid. So it's kind of hard to put everybody put a square peg in a round hole and say everybody's the same when they're actually not. You take the city of Pensacola, their fire district geographically is about the size of one of our fire districts, Inslee. And so one fire department runs that one size district, while the city has about five different stations running out of to cover that same size. So depends on density, depends on the needs, depends on what your specialty is. It's, like I said, you'd have to really sit down and break all that down to come up with a good variation.
Well, let me. Maybe I miscommunicated my suggestion. I didn't mean that everybody everywhere should be exactly the same. What I was thinking more was that if the region over which the fire authority governed were larger, then we could avoid some of the problems of, each individual one trying to figure out what it needs and buying its own equipment when, in fact, we don't need that equipment there. I think Escambia County in a lot of ways operates more efficiently than having, 12 or whatever the number is in Santa Rosa, all the different fire districts, precisely because of what you're talking about. And it just struck me that, why shouldn't, for example, Gulf Breeze and the island and Navarre Beach kind of all be the water-centric ones like you're talking about? And it struck me that the problem is we assume the county line is a big red line, and it shouldn't be. And that's kind of what I was thinking about. So anyway, I don't mean to belabor the point. It was where my brain was, and trying to always not take assumptions for granted. At the very least, some kind of pay regulation or some kind of, so we don't have this bidding war problem. Seems like it might make sense. That's why I wanted to ask you, because I knew you'd have a good answer. All right, you guys need dispatchers, is that right?
That is correct. So as far as public safety goes, we're doing really good on staffing and EMS. We are down a little bit in fire right now, but we're gonna have a cadet class coming up. But dispatchers, we have a need for dispatchers right now, and it's online, applications online, and we're looking for people who, one, you don't have to have any training, you don't have to have any background in this. We'll teach you. You got to have a want to do this. You got to have a want to help people. And yes, it is sometimes it's mind numbing, but sometimes it's really on the edge of your seat because you're the first voice they hear when they call 911. But we're looking for people who, one, want to show up to work and do the work, and two, who would enjoy this type of being able to interact with the public, help the public out. We're down, I think, five or six positions right now.
Out of how many?
We really need to get some dispatchers on board. I think we have around 24, so we're down.
Oh, my God. You're down like 20%.
Positions. Yeah.
That's huge.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
That's huge.
Let me ask. So the person who's listening to me, the person who's listening to me now, and this is the person who's never thought about themselves as potentially being a dispatcher. I used to tell people who wanted to be board operators, "Are you good at video games?" Because a person who's good at video games is going to be good at board operation. It's a weird, happens to be the same basic skill set, okay, typically. And it's not that you can't be, you can be a board op without being good at video games, but I know if you can play video games, you can play board op, okay? Who's the person that doesn't realize they'd be good as a dispatcher, that they're good at blank, and you want them to think about maybe they'd be good as a dispatcher?
So the person who, it's somebody who, like you said, if you like to problem solve, because you're looking at a screen and you're trying to make sure that you get the analyst to the right area without crossing analysts to the next call and thinking about it, and, you know, thinking about down the road, where's this going to be? Where's my next call possibly going to come from? Where's my high acuity calls at? And we have the historic data. So it's problem solving. If you're good at problem solving, you like puzzles and you like to move things around, this is one of those things for you. Because the dispatcher is constantly moving resources here and there for EMS, staging them here, prepping them here. Somebody who's good at that, logically and logistically thinking, is a good forward, and a good forward thinker will be a good dispatcher.
Is it? I tend to think of dispatch as being a lot of people skills and empathy, but it sounds like what you're describing is somebody who's a really good board game player. You know, especially some of the complicated modern board games that require you to really think through all these possibilities and make good decisions to accumulate points, and points in this case is saving lives. Is it more the board game player, or is it more, or video game player, or is it more the personality, you know, empathy kind of, or is it both, really?
It is both, because there's two positions in the room. One is a call taker. The call taker answers the call when you call 911. So you're talking to a call taker. When you call 911, you're talking to my call taker who's asking you those questions, what the situation is. They're going down a list of questions. And that person has to be empathetic. They're dealing with the public. They're the first voice they hear. And then when the call taker gets the information and the address of what the problem is, they kick it over to the dispatcher in the center part of the room. And the dispatcher then dispatches the EMS unit or the fire unit to that call. So it's twofold. So you're doing two different jobs. One, there's a call taker job that you might be doing some days. And then when you come in, you might be doing dispatching at the console where you're just dealing with the fire trucks and the EMS personnel.
Okay.
So you got to have both. You got to have good forward thinking, good logical skills, good logistics, and then empathy and good public dealing with the public skills.
All right. And I'll go ahead and say it because I don't mind admitting it. In my brain, I was thinking it was the same thing. I didn't realize it was two different jobs. John, you're nodding your head. You didn't realize it was two different jobs either.
Yeah, I
thought the call taker and the dispatcher were the same thing. So I'm glad you distinguished them. And also, obviously, the roles and the functions and the talents are substantially different, even though they might be overlapping. One might do the same job in different days. But no, that's useful. Man, we always talk about so much and don't get to anything I want to talk about. So, okay, fine. Eric Gilmore, he is the director of public, and it's not because we talk slow. Anyway, Eric Gilmore is the director of public safety in Escambia County. Eric, thanks so much for the time. And if people want to be dispatchers, where do they go or want to find out if they can be?
They go to myescambia.com, look up careers, and there's a job application for dispatchers online.
Outstanding. Thanks for the time, sir. Thanks for keeping us safe, man. I always appreciate you.
Thank you, Andrew. Appreciate you.
You bet. John Pickens has traffic on the fives.
Still reporting accident-free right now, not seeing the delays. Well, we're seeing a minor one on Highway 29 southbound as you approach I-10. Also, Davis Highway southbound as you approach Olive Road. Seeing those delays. But other than that, we are looking good. I'm John Pickens with your traffic on the fives.
In a world of payroll and HR services, things can get complicated. There are so many moving parts in business. At Avalon HR, we understand, and we have your back. Join us on the Pensacola Expert Panel as we guide you through the complicated world of payroll and HR services. Running a business is busy work. Allow Avalon HR to work with you. Join us Wednesday on the Pensacola Expert Panel at 10.
The Pensacola Expert Panel, 9 to 11 weekdays on News Radio 92.3 AM 1620.
Culver's introduces their new chicken sandwiches, adding a new spin to their classic chicken sandwich and taking them to the next level. Bigger, juicier chicken with crispier, crunchier breading. You can get yours crispy, spicy crispy, or grilled with your favorite toppings made fresh just for you. Visit Culver's today, Mobile Highway, Bayou Boulevard, or Highway 90 in Milton. Third-party delivery is available with DoorDash and Uber Eats, and curbside service is now available. From Wisconsin with love, it's Culver's. Welcome to Delicious.
Join Jonathan Cook from Jonathan's Flooring and Construction Wednesday at 9:30 on the Pensacola Expert Panel. Jonathan will be sharing his years of expertise on flooring, including insight on materials, installation, and maintenance,
plus lots of great advice on home and office remodeling, including the kitchen, bath, cabinets, and more.
The Pensacola Expert Panel on News Radio 92.3 and AM 1620. Text or call with your questions. 850-437-1620.
Guy Benson, keeping you informed of the news every day at 2. Right after Mark Lee Van Camp and Robbins on News Radio 92.3. Informative, local, dependable.
The container said microwavable.
But the aluminum foil wasn't.
Well, I'm not supposed to worry about stuff like that. I'm the talent.
Yeah, John.
I'm a talent. I'm not supposed to worry about stuff like that.
I know. I'm sorry, man. Andrew.
It's not a great movie, but that one line from Anna Faris and Just Friends is pretty good.
Oh, yes.
All right. David Wayne is in the newsroom this morning with our headlines. David?
Well, good morning. President Trump says new trade deal with the European Union that will lower tariffs on the 27-nation bloc to 15% is in the works. The president called it the biggest of all deals during a joint news conference Sunday with European Commission head Ursula von der Leyen in Scotland. Trump said the 27-member EU has agreed to purchase $750 billion worth of energy and $600 billion worth of investments in the U.S. And the Federal Reserve is meeting this week. They'll make a decision on interest rates. Despite pressure on Chairman Jerome Powell to bring rates down, they are widely expected to make no changes until September at the earliest.
All right, David, thanks so much for the update. Sheriff Bob Johnson joins us in just a couple minutes. We'll talk with him. A lot of stuff to get to. I'm Andrew McKay. It's Pensacola Morning News. Thanks so much for listening. You can always catch podcasts later, by the way, at newsradio923.com.